This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The countdown to the conventions is on. Just a short time ago, it looked like the GOP convention would be the stage for the most drama. But Donald Trump has steadily eliminated his competition, and now all eyes are on the Democratic ticket. Will Bernie Sanders go all the way to the Philadelphia convention? And how does his decision affect Hillary Clinton's chances to once again reside in the White House? Here in North Carolina, lawmakers are working on the state's budget, but they do so against the backdrop of continuing controversy over HB 2. Does that affect their priorities? And what influence will it have on the governor's race? Joining me now, as he often does, is the political junkie Ken Rudin. It's Thursday, Ken, and we just love to have you so much. We thought we'd have you a day early. Welcome.
I like to be on your show on days ending in a Y.
Well, you've done it again, Ken. What's happening on the Democratic side? This is something that we, I guess, have been distracted from. But frankly, there's a bit of drama building, right?
Not only is there drama, but there's bad feelings. And, you know, Bernie Sanders has been talking for the longest time about how this game is rigged. It sounds almost like Donald Trump, and there is some comparison to Trump and Sanders' rhetoric. But Sanders has been saying, look, from the beginning that, look, you know, there's very few presidential debates, which protects Hillary. There's a lot of all these super delegates that are involved that takes away from the Democratic, small d, Democratic nature of the nomination. But now, I mean, it was very interesting on Tuesday night in a speech in California. This was after he won. Yes, of course.
Nevada and Oregon.
He lost Kentucky, yeah. But he won Oregon pretty big.
Yeah.
But then he kept talking about not only going on beyond the votes, which ostensibly ends for all intents and purposes on June 7th with California, New Jersey, like five states altogether, but also taking his fight to the convention. Mm-hmm. He feels that he's not getting his people on the credentials, the rules, and the platform committee. He feels that what happened, if you look at what happened last weekend at the Nevada State Democratic Convention, where rulings went against the Bernie Sanders supporters, and they threw chairs, and there were threats against the Democratic state chair, and it got ugly. And right now, it just seems like Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are no closer to working out any kind of deal than they were 2-3 months ago. As a matter of fact, it sounds even worse.
Right. And it's interesting because we thought that all this was happening on the Republican side. At first, Donald Trump, as he began to rack up delegates, the conventional wisdom was, well, in a general election, he may be too far outside the mainstream. Now they're polling neck and neck in a head-to-head competition between Trump and Clinton. Well, but maybe a lot of Republicans will sit it out if they feel that their Cruz was their candidate or Rubio. We can't vote for Trump. So the Republicans will sit it out. Now that same possibility is a possibility for the Democrats, is it not?
Absolutely. There are a lot of Sanders supporters who say there's no way I'm going to support Hillary Clinton because of her ties to Wall Street and her original position on the war and her original position on same-sex marriage. I mean, she has moved around, shall we say, on many issues throughout the campaign. But the anger is really, really, really surprising because obviously Hillary Clinton is doing everything she can to soften the rhetoric. And obviously she's very aware that she wants to take on Donald Trump. But she can't take on Donald Trump when there's still Bernie Sanders, who has the possibility of, you know, picking up some more wins on the June 7th primaries.
Well, and again, all the rhetoric dies down once there's only two candidates. But the question is, who participates and who sits out? Because obviously there's nobody to the left of Hillary Clinton that she doesn't get. Donald Trump doesn't get anybody to the left of Hillary Clinton, but they might stay home. That's
the
fear.
That may not be true, though. That's the interesting part, because if you look at their views on foreign policy, it almost feels like Donald Trump is the peace dick or the dove in this battle, because Hillary Clinton in the past has expressed some pretty more aggressive, certainly more aggressive than the Obama policy on foreign policy. So it's not as easily pigeonholed the Democratic base and the Republican base if it becomes Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump.
That's because that base has really blown apart in both parties. There is no center anymore. That's why 2016 is so fascinating. Also, a split in the support on the Democratic side, not just the candidates, but unions are now threatening to sit it out or not participate in a get-out-the-vote campaign because of where the Democrats are going to get their money. Tell us about that.
Well, this is interesting. There's a multimillionaire, perhaps a billionaire environmentalist by the name of Tom Steyer, who has talked about giving money, millions and millions of dollars, to the Democrats. And now he's heading up this operation where he's trying to have this coalition of labor and environmentalists to spend, you know, to raise about maybe $50 million, maybe more, in an effort to beat Donald Trump. But here's the problem. There is a rivalry going on between labor, whose influence and clout seems to have waned over the past couple of years, and environmentalists, whose strength has been growing. So when you see these construction unions and these building trades unions, and they look at how the environmentalists have fought, for example, the Keystone Pipeline, there are a lot of these construction unions that said, look, these pipelines could bring more jobs to us. So there is a rivalry, and they say that environmentalists are sometimes so pure, and not, these are not my words, so holier than thou, that they may be costing jobs. And so there is this rivalry, which you wouldn't expect because they're both Democratic constituents, but between labor and environmentalists, which of course could, one more thing that could jeopardize the battle in trying to defeat Donald Trump.
Right. So we're seeing a historic restructuring of the support and the traditional support battle lines in these two public, realignment in both parties. How is that showing up in the polls? It is showing up, isn't it? This realignment, when we look at the head-to-head competition between Trump and Clinton, we're starting to see some evidence of that, right?
Well, it's early, and of course, you know, there are some, I mean, of course, I mean, Donald, I mean, when we talk about polls, it's Bernie Sanders who says he does much better in the general election against Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton. But if you look at states, historically Republican states like Georgia, with a large African-American population, Arizona with a large Latino population, these are Republican states that are very close and probably too close for comfort for the Republicans, because Latinos and African-Americans are leaning heavily towards Hillary Clinton. But then you look at states like Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, the industrial Midwest, where so many jobs are being lost, jobs are being shipped overseas. Trump is somehow appealing to many blue-collar Democratic voters, saying that it's Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama who's costing you jobs, and if you vote for me, you know, I'll make America great again, and I'll make your own financial situation great again. So there are states that seem to be switching. And again, you talked about how topsy-turvy the 2016 race is. Look no further than in the Electoral College and the Electoral Map.
All right. So huge fractures getting wider within the party, but Trump does seem to be mending fences with the media. He sat down with Fox's Megyn Kelly this week. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to play a piece of tape.
No.
I mean, it was
Thursday. We only play tape on Friday.
It was a day ending in a Y. Yeah, it was very interesting. One, I expected Megyn Kelly to be tougher on Donald Trump, and I expected Donald Trump to be more insistent and steadfast. It was almost like a love fest. I mean, the questions were not so much softball, but they were asked, they were all done with a smile, and what was rare for Donald Trump was for him to say, well, I maybe went against, you know, I ran after you, and I responded to you worse than I should have. Well, maybe I responded to John McCain worse than I should have. It was a softening of it. But if anybody thinks that there's going to be a new Donald Trump, I think again, because he has said in the past that what's worked so far is his no compromise, no prisoners kind of attitude. And for him to start saying, well, I'm apologizing, I think that is so not Donald Trump, and ultimately would turn off many of the supporters of his who feel that, you know, what he's doing now is perfect.
Yeah, here in North Carolina, HB2 is still the big story. It is still a big story nationally. Meanwhile, the state legislature sat down, and it does every 2 years, to adjust the budget. How does HB2 affect the daily grind of legislative activity, do you think?
Well, it's hard to really say, but I thought it was very interesting in the fact that, you know, the budget, at least what the House came up with this week, there was a vote that would raise salaries for teachers. It was raise salary for state employees. This is a very conservative state legislature, as Governor McCrory will tell you, and perhaps one of the reasons McCrory is in trouble in November is how conservative the legislature is. But then you see this budget plan that is talking about all these raises for teachers and state employees, African-American members of the legislature voted. Look, the vote was 103-12. Since when do you get all these legislators in North Carolina on the same page? Now, of course, the federal government is talking about withholding education funding because of the state's the HB2 bill. But right now, it just seems like everything seems to be almost kumbaya in the sense that, here we are trying to do all these things for all these workers. Now, of course, there's an election in November. Maybe that has something to do with it.
Well, and the question is, where's the money going to come from? Because they're not going to raise taxes. So that's the big question, and it's got to come out of somebody else's pocket, and then we find out about that after the election. Hey, got 30 seconds left. Why did the Obama administration weigh in on this at all, do you think, HB2?
You know something? I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's still so many people in the country who still look. Obviously, they believe in civil rights. They believe in Title IX. There's a great article in an op-ed in yesterday's New York Times by a Yale law professor saying, "Look, their heart is in the right places, but there are so many questions that need to be answered before the administration made that step."
All right, Ken. Always a pleasure on any day of the week. Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
This is the State of Things. Just ahead, an operatic response to House Bill 2. You'll hear it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.